This is Talking in Station, Season 3, Episode 13. It is currently August... Shoot, it's Friday. It is a Friday. We're recording 16th. On a Friday. It is August 16th, not the 15th. We are recording at a different time than usual, which makes things a little bit simpler for the time zone shenanigans. But as always, I am Artemis Albosa, a member of Pandemic Horror. Joining me today, we have Ron USMC, a member of Test Alliance Please Ignore.
Hey, guys.
Also joining me today, we have Silver Suspiria, a member of Federation Uprising.
Hey, everyone.
And our very special guest on today's show is Villy, a member of Test Alliance Please Ignore.
Good afternoon. Or evening.
And I should also mention he is your current CSM representative as well. Or a current CSM representative.
Yes, I am.
So that is fantastic stuff. And you guys have been busy on the CSM, I would suspect, with all of the chaos stuff going on, right?
NDA.
Yeah, I gotcha, I gotcha.
It's depressing to always have to say that.
The chuckle in the background makes me think that you've got some really interesting stories to tell that we just can't access. But let's move on, let's pass the NDA topic and get straight into the topic, main topic of today's show, which is the Southern War. And we're going to talk about it in the narrative of a couple of fights, which we have battle reports for. Not necessarily in chronological order, but just sort of in order of what was interesting to me and to the rest of Eve, as far as I can tell. Let's first jump into the biggest one that we have on deck today, which was a fight which took place in 46 DP. Ron, while I pull up the battle report, you want to walk us through sort of what happened here?
Yeah, so... Basically, what happened was XIX dropped supers. It wasn't advised, but it happened. And, you know, I mean, and this is just me. You know, my opinion is that, you know, you should always try to be the friend that you want. And, you know, being good friends, we dropped caps to try to extract the supers. 14 out of 15 successful, the 15th not. And in turn, you know, that gave them a lot of time because this is only like four jumps from their staging. This gave them a lot of time to just flood in the dictors and bubble. And, you know, it was kind of a, you know, bad at the end. And I think we lost 20, 25, just normal carriers. And then, you know, our friends lost one super.
So what was this fight over? Why were the supers dropped to begin with?
Billy, correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was a structure, right? Was it an XIX structure?
XIX had been fighting over a fraternity Raitaru that had been entered in the system. I believe it was actually a shield or armor timer. I'm not sure. But there had been a subcap battle going, and they utilized supers and dropped them. And obviously became quickly overwhelmed as it was not a prepared form-up. And at that point, we utilized some regular carriers to bail out most of their supercaps that they had deployed. But, you know, losing those carriers.
Right on. So you mentioned that it was within a few jump range, within four jumps of the fraternity staging system. As I understand it, Detrid, like sort of the Sinojammer wall, is being chipped away at slowly but surely, with iHubs flipping sides and therefore the strategic index resetting and Sinojammers not being able to be utilized within certain systems. Is that, in what way did that affect this fight taking place in the way that it did?
Not at all.
Not at all.
This fight was in 46 DP area, which is away from Detroit for the most part. It's on the far eastern border through a regional gate, so it's away from test staging, which is why traditionally fraternities drop things there, because they know they can avoid the direct legacy super capital and capital presence in that area.
I see, yeah, it is right on the border of Detarid in Tenerifus. So you brought up the point that Fraternity was dropping structures in there. We've spoken at length about multiple battles that have happened as a result of Legacy Co. and Fire Coalition as well, for that matter, dropping structures within Detroit itself and fights taking place on top of those. But the majority of the battle reports we have queued up for further discussion today actually happened over iHubs and not those quote-unquote content structures. is that sort of been a shift that we were seeing in this war, so to speak, where things are happening over the Sov more than the structures now?
Well, the important timers are all IHUBs. At no point, like when we started this campaign, phase two, I guess you could say, one of the first instructions that was issued is that Fortizars and down, like structure-wise, nothing matters. All of the medium-sized structures, Raiders, Asterisks, etc., are so cheap that you can literally spam them every day for a year, and it will not financially affect a coalition-level group. And to a lesser degree, Fortizars. So at multiple points throughout the campaign at the stage, we've literally thrown Fortizars away to gain strategic advantages. So at no point do structures in this war really have much effect besides providing projection options. And because it's a time zone-based war, where we're strong in one time zone and arguably the second, but they're strong in the third, we both have a free time zone to anchor structures and to be able to protect them since they're fully time zone protected in their tank, which means that there's no way for either side to effectively kill a structure without putting in a inefficient level of work. So all of the important timers are based around IHUBs, which once you flip the IHUB, you regain control of the time zone tank on that system. So when a IHUB is reinforced, usually the timers range from between 0500 to 1600 for fraternity, depending on the ADM. And obviously the window closes significantly as you up the ADM. We're always looking for fights around the fringes of those time zones. So the last IHUB we took was at EVE time 1510, I believe. And once you take an IHUB, it then switches to your time zone, and it becomes very hard for your enemy to take it if you shrink the ADM, shrink the time zone. It's vulnerable a little bit with the ADM. So any fight of substance in this war has happened basically over an IHUB, aside from the odd situations where somebody gets overconfident and makes a mistake, like this fight in 46DP happened about a week ago now.
I see. You mentioned that increasing those IHUBs provides a significant strategic benefit for protecting that system and that particular IHUB because of the time zone tanking effect of it. Does that mean there's some offensive ADM raising going on Legacy side in Deterrent?
Well, yeah, I think you can look at... I know we have a corp deployed in a couple different of the Deterrent systems to manage the ADMs. I know Ibn and Yukok have... managed the ADM and BOZ and kept it nice and high, and we've held that system for almost 2 months now, I believe, in Detroit, just because it's extremely difficult to take a system once the ADM has, or the IHUB has been flipped and the ADM has been raised. So definitely ADM management has become a part of our policy.
Was this taking place both before and after Blackout, and did Blackout have a significant effect on that?
So Blackout has had a significant effect on the war in that it turned off all of Fraternity's botters. So all of their, as soon as Blackout hit, all of the ADMs within Detroit and Wicked Creek just kind of went into a free fall, because traditionally they'd have VNI bots doing a large portion of their ADM management. And as soon as the Blackout took effect, all of those ADMs dropped down to 2 or 2.6 or basically like the levels where it's one guy trying to do the work, an hour a day kind of thing, versus before many of those systems had just permanent straight mil index 5. You have a VNI bot in there running in there for 4 or 5, 10 hours a day, and it becomes almost impossible to attack those systems, because then they're pushed into a 4 or 5 hour window during Fraternity's prime time.
I see.
I've seen sort of the botters, I don't know, Vili, if you've noticed, the botters creep back in, particularly up at Innsmother and Cache. I see them all
the
time.
That's definitely correct.
They use like pods on the gates as their indicator for when to run. We've seen a bunch of them in the last week or so up there.
Yeah, so there's definitely a slow creep back of the botters in Fraternity's area that's been taking place as they adapt their software or utilize new methods to decide if the bot needs to warp out now or not. So unfortunately, it's just what it is. We can't. you know, we can't fight bots. We're not CCP, unfortunately. So we do what we can. But unfortunately, most of those, luckily, I should say, what the Blackout does is in, like, at least moderately war-torn areas, bots are basically unworkable since, you know, if there's a cloaky campering system, it's just a free kill basically every time because the bots aren't trained properly or the software doesn't work or the code doesn't work the right way to deal with actual combat situations like a normal player would.
I feel like at this point it's worth mentioning that Winter Coalition would like to mention that, or would not be happy with us saying that they are bots over and over and over again. We're going to sort of let it be for this episode because, as I understand it, that is the vernacular of the people on this panel. So we're going to stick with calling them bots. People on Winterco, I'm sure, would claim that no, they're not bots. They're actual people who are doing this stuff. We have no way to tell for certain that's CCP's job.
There's lots of actual people in Intmother and Catch.
And
they have a wide array of people of all skill levels, like all alliances. But for any trained observer or anybody who's, you know, roamed through enemy space, you can generally tell the difference between a bot when you warp in and then you tackle him and he just sits there, doesn't deploy drones, you know, just lets you slowly kill him, doesn't move because the bot doesn't know what to do now, right? There's a multitude of situations where it becomes instantly obvious that you're dealing with a bot versus a normal player.
Fair enough. Let's move back into the fleet combat side of things, though, for a moment, and talk about a fight that took place within multiple systems in Scalding Pass, in fact, if I'm reading this battle report correctly. And as I understand it, Ron, it was focused around the EIN iHub?
Yeah, that
took place on the 8th?
Big one.
Or the 10th?
Was it the 10th? Saturday, I think? Or yeah.
It was the 10th.
Yeah, and that was another one that was Friday, right? And that one was really interesting because, you know, it was an important, iHub that, you know, we sort of, you know, made an error in the beginning, kind of, pushed into this corner, but, you know, and just had to do the absolute worst thing that you could possibly do, which is bust through, you know, a camped gate, outnumbered, and we did it and had this, you know, amazing fight on the other end, you know, had some carriers and a couple of faxes involved, and it was a wonderful fight. It lasted like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And, you know, those are the sort of, you know, centralized around the iHubs that produce these really big fights because, you know, they know that, you know, if they lose this iHub, then it will not only, you know, get rid of any Sino jammers and allow us to play structures and be able to jump there, but it will also switch over to our time zone and then we can raise that ADM and, you know, start to defend, right? Create like these small little beachheads to work from.
Yeah, and this was one of the fights that I got to actually be on because it was a U.S. time zone fight, which is sort of rare for this this war. But I also, people like to bash Fazisov, but here is where it shines a little bit because this is a constellation-wide battle report you're looking at, right? There were little fights and skirmishes all over the place, you know, around the central fight. So it was really complicated. It was really hard to coordinate on all sides, and all sides did a fantastic job, I think, and it was really a lot of fun.
And looking at this battle report, even though it's taking place all the way up in Scalding Pass, we have a significant number of legacy capitals on grid. Specifically, you're using carriers and some facts, one of which died, versus only sub-capitals on the side of Winter Coalition. And I guess a few Pandemic Horde dreads were dropped there as well. How is that sort of playing out in terms of capitals being dropped so far away from the main staging system of Legacy?
Well, I think that fax you see dead is one that we used to save one of the Entosis ships, and then the main fight broke out and we kind of just left him there, unfortunately. So he got dread bombed, you see? Yeah, he was by himself after he saved one of the Entosisers. But the cap fights up in that area, you know, we've kind of talked about chipping away at the underbelly. We could get caps up in there now, so it's only a couple of jumps away.
Ah, so you just sort of mid them over and then they're ready to go?
Pretty much, yeah.
Right on. Any other comments about the EAN fight over the iHub? It's up in Scalding Pass, so I should ask, I do have another question, which is, how does, do you find the response to timers up in Scalding Pass differs from the response to timers down in Detrid in terms of like the composition that Fraternity or, pardon me, Winter Coalition uses or anything like that?
That's pretty much Munins Online. I don't know if Ron and really see anything different, but yeah, it's pretty much the same sort of a fight that develops.
Why are Munins so popular? Sorry for the possibly overly simplistic question or overly complicated question.
From my standpoint, Vili, you could jump into, it's the weapons platform combined with the fact that the ship is pretty quick, with a reasonable tank and a low sig. So, you know, you wind up with just not really even a huge critical mass being able to volley off targets and like negate even facts, because like during that fleet, I was in a fax and, you know, the guy would broadcast and as fast as I'm locking him, he would pop. Like once in a while, if the shots were grazing, I'd be able to catch a few. But, you know, it's the weapons platform in my mind that allow you to sort of fight up even.
Yeah, so Munins basically are, there's only really two fleet platforms in the game right now that are reasonably, like, S tier, I guess, would be the kind of term you would use. And everything below that is at the fleet combat level, 100 plus person level. There's nothing else that really comes close, and that's Eagles and it's Munins. Because Munins volley for anywheres from 5k down, basically. And so once you get 20, 30 Munins, you're in the range to start volleying for 150,000 damage, which means you can basically volley anything subcapital. And if you can't volley it, then you can start volleying their Logi and just chew through them that way. The Munin has great range. It basically hits like a truck from 0 to 130. It can go over 2,000 meters per second with links easily. It's just the most versatile platform in the field. And when you combine it with the ADC module, which allows it to have a really strong tank that is insanely easy to rep if it can hit its ADC in time, you know, there's just nothing that competes with it except for the Eagle, which is better in different situations, but the situations in which it's better are less common. So it's just arguably the most versatile and simple weapons platform in the game. Anybody can take out a fleet of Munins, and if they know how to properly broadcast targets, you know, basically just one at a time, they're going to be in a situation where they should be able to, you know, get like a good 60, 70, 80% of the out of the fleet, I guess you could say. Like there's not a whole lot of, I don't want to say skill expression, but you know, even a, you know, medium level FC is going to do well with them generally.
I'm of two minds about the prevalence of Munins in the current meta. Like part of me is like, it's getting kind of stale because like Silver said, harkening back to Ishtar's online as Munins online, but because of their ability to volley through reps, even at medium scales, so to speak, it means that battles are always bloody. It's not the case that one side just didn't have enough numbers, they can't break through fax reps and they get dumpstered or they can't take the fight. It is that ships are dying on both sides pretty much every time, which makes for some pretty fantastic battle reports for me to browse through. So I like it in that sense, but it is getting perhaps a little bit stale.
Yeah, it's because you just like, it's like an old like Civil War kind of thing. You both line up and you're both volleying each other until the other one, to one side is culled down enough where they can't volley anymore, and then the fight's over, right?
Reminiscent of last week's episode where we had Elise Randolph and Manfred Sidiason talking about the history of Pandemic Legion, and they were discussing the way that the old sniper battleship doctrines used to work, where you'd all warp into each other at the super long ranges and then just shoot each other until one person didn't have enough battleships left. Except now they're heavy assault cruisers.
Well, the only thing I'll say, one thing we're on, is that there is a dance involved, right? Because the things move so fast, there is a little bit of a dance. And Elo's been flying these things since they got buffed, right? And he's really good at it. But managing range and keeping your fleet and with the right ammo type does make a difference a lot of times. So it's not completely like stand up and shoot each other. There's things to be done, I think.
Yeah, you know, it reminded me of when we were talking, you know, to Elise and them about that, you know, and armor hacks, right? You know, cruiser size SIG, they're really fast, a nice gun platform, multi-range, you know, and I think, you know, even now, you know, just the speed, you know, that is so powerful to be able to go 2,400 meters a second. And even if you do, you know, make a wrong turn or do something, it's, you're instantly back, right? And you can close distance quick and get out of situations pretty quick. So, you know, it's a really great platform. I think it's overused, but if they tweak it a little bit, then there'll be another meta and something else will be overused. And what can you do?
While we're on the subject of Munins, I'd like to talk about sort of how fights escalate to capitals and perhaps even super capitals. We have a battle report here from the system of XSUD. It happened on the 14th. And in this fight, it was 500v500, Winter Covey Legacy. And both sides had mainly Munins, but Legacy dropped capitals, a number of dreads, and then also some carriers in support. And I'm curious, how do capitals play into a subcap fight between two Munin fleets? Are the ranges, the speed of the ship such that they don't have much effect? Are they extremely powerful? How do they play in?
Well, so I was there for this fight. For the most part, the capitals weren't really there for the fight. The fight was on the gate. The capitals were dropped. Well, they were dropped on a Fortizar and warped into the I-Hub because the I-Hub was cyanogenned to kill an Entosis Fax. So that's kind of how the capital situation spawned. So there was a ongoing bloody fight on the gate, trading basically even for, I don't know, 50 bill aside. And meanwhile, they were spinning up an Entosis Fax on the new I-Hub in the system. And they had a cyanogemmer up, and they had a secondary, smaller, more effective Jackdaw fleet, I believe it was, or Harpy fleet. So we couldn't get there with regular subcaps to clear the fax. So we had to jump in some dreads on the Fortizar, warp them in to the Entosis fax to kill it. And then once we killed it, we also killed the cyanogemmer, and then we jumped in some carriers just to cover that our fax when it jumped in to do the Entosis. And for the most part, I mean, the carriers were... The fight after a little while went from the gate to the I-Hub, and carriers shot some stuff, but for the most part, they did basically nothing.
Is that fairly typical for how escalation occurs when Munins are in play?
To a degree. The general thing is you need roughly 50 to 60 carriers to be effectively able to chew through Munin logistic ships, like scimitars, effectively. So it becomes very difficult to do anything, really, if you're below that critical mass of carriers. So
it's interesting, I mean, you mentioned chewing through the logistics ships. Is the Munins themselves, typically when Munins are fighting other Munins, I see FCs shooting DPS ships first and pretty much ignoring logistics through the volley. But the carriers,
right,
the fighters don't have that volley, that's why you shoot Logi first?
Correct. The Munins will see the fighters all over them, they'll press their ADC, and when you're ADC, the reps you get are so insane because you're at like 90 whatever plus percent resist. So the rep factor is like 15 to 1 or whatever craziness it is. At that point, there's no way you're ever going to kill a Munin under reps unless you're like 100 plus carriers or something crazy. You know, I've done it, don't get me wrong, but it takes a lot of more carriers than you want to be. So your best efficient path with carriers is to shoot the logistics, because once the carriers get on top of the logistics, you can missile volley down them, usually somewhat effectively. It's not great, but the other problem being that the Munins and Scimitars actually just outrun the fighters to a certain degree as well, because they're going so fast and the fighters can't keep up with them with just their regular speed. They need to have that prop mod on. So
I see. We have one warp battle report to go through here, and it is a break from the meta, so to speak. There are still Munins, but it's Munins versus a Stuka fleet, or a Goku fleet, depending on your preference. Now, I understand there's a bit of a pseudo-legal battle going over the naming scheme here, or at least there was in the past. Which naming scheme do we prefer on this show today?
Well, I mean, we won, right? So it's Goku's.
Well,
Goku's.
Really,
Stukas are Stukas are far inferior. I mean, I thought that we already proved that like a year ago. I thought this was, you know, water under the bridge. That's just me, though, so I thought.
All right, well, we'll roll with Goku's for this show's vernacular here. And the fight in particular, it took place, looks like, between two systems, QRBN and PEK, both of which, if I'm not mistaken, are within Legacy territory, right? And in these particular... Oh, go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, no, and I think that's Fire, maybe, on the edge here. That's XIX, I think. But it's right next to, you know, it's right next to us. Right next to Brave, and we're to the south and also a little bit to the north as well.
So this fight, it took place on the 11th, and it had, again, roughly 400 to 500 on each side, Legacy, except on this particular occasion, that was not Fraternity or Winter Coalition, it was the Initiative and Pandemic Legion and Pandemic Horde and Volta and Bomber's Bar. You get the point. Basically everybody besides Fraternity who were fighting against Legacy Coalition in this particular case. And so Legacy, or I guess, Ron, do you have the story for this fight? I'll let you take it away.
Yeah, so, you know, I just want to state for the record that those numbers include the defense fleet that, you know, like more than half of us showed up after it was already over. So we might have shot someone, you know, in that system and got on this, but, you know, it was like 500 showing up, and they were fighting, I think, like 100. And, you know, it was really interesting because Pando streamed it. So you can see, I mean, it was a massive amount of Gokus and randoms. I think PL brought Kikis and all this crazy stuff. And, you know, and then XIX was defending, and we were, you know, just like one mid away. So, you know, we were on our way over. And, you know, of course, you know, they don't stick around when we come down, right? So, but it was really just a massive amount of firepower. I just remember when I just saw them leaving, it was just causing tie-dye. It was ridiculous.
Ron, you are often quoted for not complaining.
Yeah.
How should I put this? We'll say complaining.
Articulating?
But articulating, okay, your, yeah, frustration with the frequency,
yes,
with which Pando appears in Legacy,
yes,
space. Let's chat about that for a moment.
Yep.
Tell us your feelings.
Yep. So, you know, I love Pando, and, you know, but ever since he started this damn streaming, you know, he's like hitting us every day. And I'm like, you know, you can spread it around. Like, I know that you love us, but feel free. You know, we can see other people. And then he'll laugh and then come back the next day. But, you know, The great thing about Pando, you know, is he is always like, you know, loves to talk strategies and this and that, and, you know, and talks about what he could have done better or what we could have done better, you know. But I think, you know, with Pando, you always, you know, need to understand that Pando could be your best friend, but, you know, you're also dinner in his eyes. So, you know, you always got to keep him a little bit at bay. But, you know, I always kind of tease him, and then I'm, you know, tease him about, like, you know, hanging out. I'm like, you know, Pando, like, you don't have to hang out with him if you don't want to, you know. And so it's always kind of like a fun back and forth. So I was really excited, even though I didn't go on this fleet, I think it was Sunday, that Init got hit. And I was like, wow, look at this. It's like a whole new day. They should write a song about this.
Yeah, they go where the entertainment is, right? He gets to come down here, and at the end of the stream, he gets to say, "Are you not entertained?"
Speaking of entertainment, Silver, it occurs to me we have one more battle report that was possibly a Pando fleet. I'm not sure, but it happened over in your neck of the woods, and in fact with Federation Uprising Rorquals, where yet another Goku or Shtuka fleet was dropped on some Rorquals, and Legacy dropped some Titans on them. What was the story here?
Yeah. We were doing our mining op thing, right? And usually, like Ron was saying towards the end of the beginning of the show, before we started recording, we keep close eye on Fraternity, right? Because they're the threat. And there were not much movement out of them. They were kind of like poking around. So we were kind of just like looking forward to a chill night. And then out of the darkness appears 120 goon bombers. Again, Stuka. I don't think they were Stukas, though. They were straight up covert bombers. And this kind of thing is really strong right now, because like I saw the goon bomber enter system maybe an hour before they showed up. So like, what do you do as an FC when you're doing a mining op, right? You see a bomber, he enters system, you know he's there. So you're sort of watching your X-Cavs and your cargo containers, but it could be no one behind them. It could be 10 behind them. It could be 5,000 behind them. So it was a pretty strong fleet. I called Ron and Vili for help because, like, damn, 120 bombers. They got two of my Roracles, but this is a good blackout fleet, I'll tell you. Yeah, they brought out some shiny toys. Because, you know, this happens in U.S. time zone, right? And the U.S. time zone, the capital slash super capital action isn't really great because, you know, fraternity is sort of just waking up in the U.S. time zone and things don't really pop off in a big way. So anytime they get a chance to drop their toys, they go ahead and do that, which is always entertaining for everyone.
Fair enough. So that it sort of exhausts our pile of battle reports, so to speak, and we want to move the conversation a bit towards looking at the future. And this is in context of the new changes that were announced to Sinojammers. They're going to be coming in September sometime, with plenty of time for feedback in between, of course. So there's a chance they could change, but I'm personally hoping they don't. Let's go through what those changes are, and then maybe have a bit of a discussion on how we think they're going to affect things. So anybody want to take it away explaining what these changes are?
So, go ahead, Ron. Yeah, you did a whole nice stream of it.
So basically, they're just restricting the Sino module onto 8 ships, right, in the whole game. You know, the Black Ops battleships, all 4, you know, if you want to pay 4 times the price of a battleship and get T1 resists with a jump drive, do I have a ship for you? And then the other 4, you know, are the Force Recons, right? So they're not the ones that do not show up on D-Scan. They do show up on D-Scan. But those 4, they're still, you know, expensive, right? But they're, you know, somewhat powerful, very niche. And I'm sure that I don't think they mentioned the others, you know, kind of random ones like the Marshal and the Enforcer and these other sorts of things. But really, you know, what they're doing is just removing the small, cheap ships that people use to kind of traverse. Or, you know, I, personally, the one that I've used for years is the Sino Scepter, right? Because the Scepter is very quick, can go through bubbles, and it can really, you know, get forward, you know, to that like forward edge of the battle area and drop a Sino and then allow you to insert capital. So they're really restricting the movement on that. It's quite a drastic change, right? Because you're talking 16 years of people doing it in this way. And I actually don't know how many capitals there are in the game or whatever, but if you think it's like 10% of all the games or of all the ships that people own, maybe 5% or whatever, you're going to be limiting it to like 4 ships, right? Because the other 4 really aren't viable for any normal use. So, you know, 4 ships. And now, you know, I instantly changed all of my skill plans, right, on my Sino alts. So, but, you know, I'm super, super interested because I've been so busy that I actually haven't even talked to Vili about it yet. So I'm really interested to hear what Vili thinks.
It occurs to me, before we really dig deep into the Sino changes, there's one more sort of bit of topic to discuss with regards to the current state of affairs in the Southern War. And that is the prevalence of the Northern forces, quote unquote. So we're talking PanFam, Pandemic Legion, Pandemic Horde, Northern Coalition. And as I'm told, they have been more and more prevalent down in the Southern Theater, with fleets being called down to help out on timers, things like that, as well as Pandemic Legion is even deployed down south to an area within and dropping dread bombs on Rorquals and things like that. So let's quickly take some time to discuss to what extent that is the case and how that affects things.
Billy, do you want to...
So sure, I can talk about it.
Yeah.
So as of 5 or 6 days ago, I guess, I'm not tracking when exactly. Actually, it's the 10th, right before the 10th, some point. Horde, Northern Coalition, Pandemic Legion. You know, Fraternity basically called the banners, called in their allies. I think it probably maybe just started with Elo asking Alpha Star. I'm not quite sure how it all went down exactly, but for the most part, they're all here now. So we now have a situation where both Pandemic Legion and Pandemic Horde, with a smattering of NC Dot, are basically here for all the timers. So that's definitely uptipped the balance a little bit in terms of most of the normal time zones. So we're definitely feeling a good bit of pushback on that now. So that would kind of be, like, if you ask me a more exact question, I can probably give it to you.
So are they fully deployed down there, or are they just traveling down for timers utilizing jump gates?
So a Horde Vanguard, Partisans, I don't know the groups well enough to say what they're called, are deployed down now. And they've been calling in the Horde main crew for most timers. Pandemic Legion has like an actual deployment into the 77S area. Obviously there's no caps, well, there is no supers, but there is regular caps in these equations. But besides that, it's hard to say that they're really hard here, but they're here enough that it's making a pretty significant difference, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like PL, at least that contingent in 77S, is more focused on Tenerifus and Fire Space at the moment, right? I see them running ops through there quite often now. I think they might even be dropping structures.
They've been putting a lot of pressure on us through Entos's attacks with PL, which has been their main focus the last few days. I mean, it is what it is. I don't know really.
I have a more specific question regarding the way this affects time zone tanking and the battles that occur as a result of who is more powerful in a particular time zone. So with Horde and Pandemic Legion coming down, they are not, to my knowledge, the majority Chinese time zone, or even Russian time zone for that matter. So are they tipping the balance of power in the sort of US-EU time zone to the extent that Legacy no longer has a significant advantage there? Or how does this play into the time zone warfare? Let's go with that.
I would say it tips the balance enough that we go from significant advantage to minor advantage at best. I wouldn't say it makes it even, but it's definitely nowhere near what it is before. With that being said, on all the heavy timers, like early on the war, they were showing up on force as well for the big stuff. But when you're in a much more everyday presence kind of thing, it definitely has a lot more noticeable effects, I guess you could say.
I see. So to summarize the current state of affairs as far as time zone power balance is concerned, within the Chinese time zone, the Winter Coalition has a significant advantage. Within EU and US time zone, Legacy Coalition has a slight advantage. Is that accurate?
I would say they have a moderate advantage in Chinese time zone. We have a minor advantage in EU and US time zone. Yeah, that'd be accurate.
Awesome.
And, you know, I would just love to just make that distinction that there's a difference between, you know, someone showing up with timers and, you know, going for strategic objectives, right? So, you know, they're down here, they're, you know, stationed down here, deployed down here, and, you know, hitting Entosis and things like that. So they're fully involved, right? They're not, you know, down here for the good fights or, you know, sightseeing or anything like that.
Interesting point. All right. So let's shift our focus back over to Sinos. We had a bit of a false start there, but now we're going to really, truly dig into these changes which occurred, which, to recap, from here on out, only regular Sinos can only be used by Force Recons, and by, which are the Cloaky Recon ships, and by Blackout's battleships. Covert Sinos remain unchanged. However, jump freighters can now jump to covert Sinos. So that is a significant change as far as logistics side of thing is concerned. But I think what we are going to spend the majority of time talking about is how this change to regular Sinos impacts the way that combat takes place. Now, we can't really predict what the state of the war in the South is going to look like in September, right? That's too far away. Fog of war, even with the intel systems we have now, is too much for predicting the future there. But we would like to talk a little bit about how that's going to affect sort of escalation paths or the way the balance of power between Sino jammers and people trying to jump caps into a place, how that works out. Who wants to jump in with some opinions here?
Go ahead, Billy.
So the question is, how do the mechanics affect battles?
Let's start with even will they? So will the mechanics affect battles? Because there is an argument to be made.
Affect every single thing that happens in Eve. Like, they are so massive, it's impossible to describe almost how much they will affect basically every single interaction in Eve to a degree. They are significant. Okay. I don't think they will achieve all of the objectives that they think they're going to, but they will certainly have an effect.
So what sort of effect do you think they will have on combat specifically? Fleet combat, the sort of stuff that we're seeing happening in the Southern War?
They will definitely make it more difficult for capitals to become involved in any fight, and if capitals are involved in a fight, it will almost certainly be because the other side knows they're in control of the situation. Once you have full grid control of a fight with capitals, it is incredibly hard to be the person now who's going to challenge that control. So if you're in a situation where I've had 10 minutes with, you know, I put my recon on grid first, I drop a Sino, I get a fax in, or a bunch of fax in, a bunch of carriers in, and now you're in a position where you have to warp in a recon, which is going to land at the edge of my bubble, pop a Sino just to drop dreads, let's say, and you say you get 30 more dreads through. Well, I've had my Sino for 10, 20 minutes at this point, right? Because it's been sitting there getting fax trapped. Whereas you have, you know, 10, 20 seconds at most to get every person in your fleet through the Sino. And yeah, you can do it with another recon, but so can I, right? It really limits the way in which fights can and will happen. And yeah, it's kind of unfortunate.
So I was thinking really of the same sort of thing. Like, this thing might sort of short circuit escalations, right? Because like you said, the first one in now has the advantage and you have your bubbles up. How are you ever going to get dreads in at zero on the target like you want? Like, now you got a recon ship that can more or less, you know, which direction it's going to come from. It's going to decloak before it gets anywhere close to a target. Like, do you see that this might short circuit the typical escalation path you see of like, well, I'm dropping carriers and I'm dropping dreads and I'm dropping titans, that kind of thing?
Yes.
Like, yeah, that's my worry.
I have no doubt there's going to be situations where people want to use capitals, but they've got one recon in system. And if they try to bridge in more, they'll lose the one recon they had to get two. And two is still not enough to guarantee you can get in what you need. And, you know, if your recons die by any chance, that means you can't get in your facts if something goes wrong with your supers. Or let's say I jump in supers and my supers bump, then I need like five Sinos to be ready to handle all the possibilities for what could happen if they bump, right? So there's capitals. There has to be a level of predictability to allow for capital usage because capitals are such a significant asset. People will not throw away $1,000 ships just for the memes, right? Like, don't get me wrong, there is some people that do. But, you know, at the large scale, you can't throw away a 10, 20, 50-man super fleet. You know, if you're in the control of that kind of fleet, you have to have at least enough variables under your control to know that you're doing the right thing, or at least have a fair chance of being successful. If you don't do that thing, it's not fair to yourself or your pilots to try and do it, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and that's sort of, you're talking about the removal of the hard Sino, right? Yeah, everyone starts off, or at least most of the time, you start off with a soft Sino, some ship that you expect to lose, but you get the one ship in that you need to be the hard Sino that's going to live long enough to bring in the rest of what you had planned. We don't have any hard Sino options anymore. I mean, you may argue that a Blob's battleship could be brick tanks, but holy crap, the cost of that.
I'll give you a fun example. In UALX, the Northern Forces jumped in like on a recon or a Sino Receptor or something like that. They jumped in an Aeon and put a Sino up with an Aeon, and that was their hard Sino. Because that's the level of ship you need to ensure that you can have a Sino up that everybody's going to be able to jump to.
Well, it's not just capital escalation that's the problem here too, right? What about reinforcements? What about Titan bridging reinforcements on a soft Sino is your only option? Yeah, right? I foresee that being a problem too.
How do we think it's going to play into the Rorqual defense meta, so to speak? Are we worried that you won't be able to get your forces in to defend Rorquals anymore? Like, let's assume, for the sake of argument, that everybody has a recon alt with their Rorqual. Just for the sake of this discussion, let's start at that point. Will the recon be able to survive long enough for a significant amount of forces to get in for defense?
So the standard SOP we're kind of working on for post patch is going to be basically you have to assume that your enemy is always going to be able to get a Sino and Hib up, because the Rorqual can't put a Sino up himself anymore. And, you know, your enemy just gets long enough that it's a safe bet. They're going to be able to get an inhib up. So if your enemy gets an inhib up, then you have to work under a different kind of frame. So our general SOP is probably going to be something along the lines of, A, there will be at all times a Sinogen in every system under your umbrella. B, there will be 2 to 5 recons on a Titan, or just sitting basically on the undock of your primary hub. There will be a Titan there. Something gets tackled, you bridge, you know, 1 to 5 recons to the beacon. The recons then start getting set up for Rorqual saving situations, I guess you could say. Then you're in a situation where you have multiple Sinos, so you should be able to effectively get in and save the Rorqual pretty effectively. You might lose 1 or 2 recons, but the Rorqual will be fine. And as an alliance or coalition level, you should be able to just, you know, freely reimburse the Rorquals, no biggie. Or freely reimburse the recons, no biggie. When it comes to supers, you're going to have to be in a situation where you will have to basically have the facts jump to the beacon, warp to the super almost instantly, within like 30 seconds. If you can't do that, chances are most supers that get tackled are going to die.
Yeah, so like,
and there's almost no way for a carrier to survive, basically, because any reasonable size fleet is going to kill a carrier long before a fax can jump in and warp to him.
It sounds like carrier and super ratting is just suicide then after these changes.
Well, you get 3 different situations, right? Carrier ratting to me has been obsolete since Blackout. I mean, it's just too difficult. It's just too difficult for a carrier to do it under the strength of covert ships right now and bombers. Rorquals, I find myself in a situation a lot. Like, Ron's come to save me a bunch of times. More often than not, even when my Rorquals can light Sinos, they don't for whatever reason. So the Sino hip goes up and I have to bring in help at range anyway. So I'm just foreseeing my operation changing till I'm going to have a few recons at a perch and it'll light at 300K and, you know, we'll bring in what we have to through there. And it should be really okay given that you have the panic. Supers are the more critical thing. Supers are now a bigger risk because you need to get that fax onto them. So you're talking about like 3 different save scenarios there.
It is an interesting point you bring up that you're lighting the Sino at a ping. Do we suspect that it... Allow me to restart that sentence. Do we think that bringing in capitals on a ping instead of trying to bring in your dreads right on top of whatever in a regular style fleet fight, like a fleet fight escalation, so to speak, will be a tactic, or is it just not possible?
I don't know what you mean. Sorry, you're gonna have to like.
Okay, so Silver's talking in the scenario of saving Rorquals, he's gonna have his recons at a ping so that he can avoid the Sino inhib. Would it be possible to use recons at a ping in a regular fleet fight, not to avoid a Sino inhib, but rather to avoid the recon being instantly blapped in order to bring in your capitals?
Yes, but then your capitals are at ping and not where they need to be. But then again, tactics may change where people will just, you know, jump in 3 to 4 like sniper dreads, snipe the inhib down, or 3 to 4 sniper titans, snipe the inhib down. Then warp a recon to the Rorqual at 0, pop, put a Sino up, and ta-da, you're in a better place than you were before.
So there is, it seems like there's going to be some counterplay and some kinks in the meta to work out before we finally settle into what will be the steady state of this new system.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things, like you could keep your capitals, could keep some recons in their belly, you know, in the fleet hangar, and if your recon gets popped, and if your caps... Your capsules, you know, should quick enough get in another one light. You know, I don't know if that will be feasible, but it's something.
Right? Yeah, like for example, our just general plan is have 100 recons on the market. Just buy a new one instantly if you need one. No biggie. And, you know, you fully reverse recons, you can lose 10 in a fight. It's no biggie. But it's going to be tricky. For sure.
Yeah, the problem is complicated.
You're also going to see a massive level of decrease in usage, it would be my guess, in terms of people just won't be interested in going out to the same degree that they are currently.
Usage of what in particular?
Carriers, supercarriers, Rorquals.
Ah, I see.
Like, what's my incentive to go out and, you know, get shit on, right? Like, if the systems as they develop aren't effective enough, then people just won't go out. Like, the system as it is currently highly favorable to the attacker, despite what, you know, the consensus by some loud vocal members of the community seem to think. You get 100% target selection, you expose yourself to zero risk, you know, in choosing your target, and then, you know, inhib doesn't get up or they jump in 50 supers, then yeah, sure, they're safe. But there's ways around that too. You just have to be a little bit creative. It's not as simple as it's often made out to be.
So there was CCB Rise recently did an interview with Talking Stations, recently as in yesterday morning, and the recording went up last night. So I know some people haven't had a chance to listen to all of it yet. But one point I want to highlight, and directly related to this discussion, is that Rise mentioned that this change gives them a balance lever, so to speak. It gives them an ability to tweak the power of Sinos by increasing or reducing the number and variety and power of ships which can light Sinos. Specifically, the topic was brought up about covert T3s being able to light Sinos or not, because they're kind of like Force Recon ships in that they're cloaky, but then they're also tankier and they can be nullified, so that really changes the balance of power there. Vili, do you have an opinion on sort of what the ideal place for you as far as what number and type of ship should be allowed to light Sinos to be in a good spot?
It's a tough question. I don't know. Like, to me, I think you would have accomplished almost the exact same thing without the same level of side effects if you would have just said no capitals can light a Sino. Like, there still would be problems with that. But, like, well, let's be honest here, guys. Like, if you can't light a Sino on a, you know, a ratting carrier, supercarrier, Rorqual, you're accomplishing almost the exact same thing under the umbrella situation. And then at the same time, if you're trying to, you know, limit the effects you have on everywhere else in the game where things are much more, I don't want to say balanced, but like things are a little normaler or where the meta is at is closer to what they want, then you're not screwing up everything else in the game. So to me, it makes no sense to kind of what they went with versus what they could have went with.
Curious.
Yeah, sort of like they swung wildly in one direction, but from what Rise was saying, now that they have levers, if it can be demonstrated that it's overly broken, they can swing it back and maybe give you a hard sign option with a hick or something, or, you know, explore options like that.
Well, a hick isn't like sure.
Yeah, it's facts.
You know, I'll take what I can get at this point. Like, if my choice, like, I literally popped a sign in yesterday with a rapier against like 40 jackdaws, and I was dead before the minnow came in. Like,
it's
Force Recons, you know, I mean, it wasn't like the tankiest of rapiers in the world, but I still would have died before the recon came in, or the facts came in, right? Like, there's just no way, you know, a ship with under 200k HP is ever going to be an effective, like, level Sino, I guess.
Yeah, because we were just talking about Munins being the meta, and they hit like a truck. You know, they can instantly blap a rapier.
Pretty much,
or yeah. Jackdaws, too. Heavy, you know, light missiles volley pretty hard. There are many things that can erase a recon before anything can come through, right?
You know, I think, you know, one of the things, I think there's a difference when you think of how the mechanics work, and this works, you know, on paper, or this works this, but, you know, you also have to include humans, right? And people just make mistakes, or they hit a button wrong, or they do something different. And I can't even count how many times people haven't had ozone, or they've offlined, you know, their Sino or this and that. And you have all that in addition to this new thing. And then, you know, what people are, you know, I mean, we obviously know, but the amount of firepower that can appear instantly on grid with no notification whatsoever, You know, that, I mean, how many bombers would it take to alpha, you know, a recon, right? Maybe 30, 35. And, you know, it's going to be alive for 3 seconds from the time that you launch to time it hits. And with this amount of firepower out there, putting something so, you know, precious in the sense that it is, you know, your ability to get help or something like that, just vaporizes. I mean, how many are you going to have to throw, right? This is going to, it's going to be like the old school days of just throwing atrons at something until it dies, you know? So I don't know, you know, and I know that CCP Rise said that they're still, you know, talking, but that's basically kind of what they wanted, but I don't know, something a little bit more tank, something. Jesus.
Well, there's other things too. Like during that interview, Carnero said he had a couple of his pilots who are exclusively capital guys who enjoy capital play, whether it be, you know, dropping on a big fight or even doing some small stuff. And when he said that, I had the exact same concerns from a couple of my pilots who are always out there baiting a fight, and they'll use a fax to, as an alt to save themselves, or a surprise, hot drop. You know, that's a valid game tactic that is now much harder for them, because now they're going to need a rapier alt to have a hope at doing that. So that, you know, and given all the changes recently, carriers have been nerfed and nerfed and nerfed and nerfed, and then blackout, and then this and this. People who enjoyed carrier play, either ratting or otherwise, feel like they've been completely stripped of that gameplay. And honestly, I don't blame them, because I don't see what a normal carrier does right now. Like, what do you do with a normal carrier? Like, they've fallen a little bit too far out of meta. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
I think if these Sino changes go through, carriers will be better than Hodreds in terms of escalation in a subcap fight. Or they already are, depending on the situation, because you can bring them in at range and use the fighters. So you don't have to worry about your side. One more time, I couldn't hear you, sorry.
I said, yeah, I agree with that. That makes perfect sense.
Okay.
I'm more talking about the little guy. Like my one pilot that's just hot dropping people, you know? Like, now he needs another alt. You know, maybe that's okay.
Fair enough.
Maybe that's just a new reality he has to deal with, but he doesn't need just another alt. He needs another fairly skilled alt to fly, you know, a rapier or something like that.
You know, they could also just kind of go the monitor route, right? Which is create a super tanky ship, and that's all it does is light Sinos.
Maybe. Just
another opportunity for skins and a new model. It could be awesome. Like, let it roll, brother.
There is one final point I want to make regarding the whole discussion with Sinos and the Blackout era and things like that, which is in the CCP Rise interview, he went into quite a bit of detail about CCP's goals and intentions with these changes and all of the Chaos era, quote unquote, so to speak. And one of them in particular was the ISK faucet of EVE Online. And something major that he mentioned was that the ISK faucet is nearly becoming an ISK deficit now. With Blackout, with all of these changes that are coming through, it is now becoming a deficit. And that opens up some opportunities for when changes happen, when new mechanics are brought into the game, CCP can introduce rewards with them and be less careful about sort of giving an ISK reward for doing a thing in EVE Online. Would you rather them do that, or would you rather them reduce the restrictions that are being introduced with Blackout and the whole Chaos era? As an opinion from our panel, how about we start with you, Vili?
I would rather them reduce or not be as hard, because I don't trust them to make changes, to put it bluntly. Like, you know, some of the, let's say the metrics are, you know, show shit's really bad. Sometimes CCP knows the shit is really bad for like 8 months, and it takes them like 8 months to fix it, right? Like, or longer. And like, we all get to sit and, you know, live through that, and it's not fun. Like, and it drives people out of the game more than anything I know. And like, it's just, holy cow. I wouldn't want to be in that kind of situation if I can help it. So yeah, I would like more rewards if we're going to be getting more risk. And certainly there's more risk now, but I just don't trust CCP to actually do it.
You'd rather them lighten the stick rather than enlarge the carrot, to use that terminology.
Something like that.
Yeah. How about Ron, Silver, you guys? You agree, disagree? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, as I like to call Hunter Blackout, you know, this past patch, Hunter's Paradise, I think, you know, that it's really difficult, you know, for, you know, kind of, and I'm going to say normal as in like people that probably have less than, you know, 3 or 4 billion ISK or whatever. And, you know, they maybe have a few ships and they have some doctrine ships. And because and obviously I'm only, you know, talking from like NullSec, but, you know, I think it's very hard for them, you know, to rat or to do things, you know, because they are, you know, the weakest link, you know, in the ratting kind of world. And you can look, you know, on kill boards and how many, you know, kind of ratters are killed, right? So, I mean, like active players and just normal guys, you know, and I was kind of joking and, you know, well, I wasn't really joking, but just kind of pointing out, and this is a couple of days ago in one of our back channels, and I was like, you know, this guy, you know, he's played like 2 years ago and he just came back and he's died 6 times, you know, in the past 4 days, and he's doing everything right and this and that. And, you know, I guess an argument could be made that he doesn't belong down there. Fine, that you could make that argument. But then I think the other argument is that there is, you know, zero defense against a, you know, a plague Loki, right? Like a uncloaks on you, zap, you know, a bomber is right there, uncloaks, instantly points you, and then the Loki just, you know, volleys you down. I think that with no counterplay to that beyond, you know, supposedly like camping gates forever and doing all these other things, but, you know, there needs to be some sort of, if I'm going to risk, you know, let's say 6 months, you know, of play time, right, which is how long maybe it took to earn a super. Like, if I'm going to risk 6 months of play time, don't ruin that in 3 seconds, right? I think there needs to be some sort of value playoff, if that makes sense.
I have a question that we may not be able to answer, but it's something I would like an answer to in some form or another eventually, even if we can't answer it on this show. And that is, are the effects of Blackout on sort of the individual line member, and then also separately the coalition as a whole, are they making it more difficult to fund fleets? Is it more difficult for the line member to afford his doctrine ships, or is the coalition taking care of that with SRP? And then on the coalition side, are you guys making enough income from taxes or from moon mining or from whatever other income streams you have to be able to continue to fund your war efforts? Or are things going to have to be scaled back if Blackout continues at its current rate?
Well, for one thing, to follow up on Ron's comments there and your first question, CCP sort of ripped off the Band-Aid in one direction. And to echo Vili's concerns, if there's things that are broken, I hope they're quick enough to throw it back the other way. Right? You can't rip off things and break stuff and then be slow to fix it. Right, so I know that they're willing to break the game to shake the meta, and I'm all for that attitude. But right now, bombers are too strong. The cloaky stuff is too strong. The guy that was carrier ratting can't anymore for the most part, and there's really nothing for him to replace it with. I mean, you could come up with options like, maybe you do some abyssal stuff, but that doesn't appeal to everyone. So they got to be mindful of counterplay for what they've created, and replace stuff that they've taken away. So I'm all for increasing the reward rather than lessening the push, because it is more risky out there, and we got to give people back what they feel like they've been nerfed a little bit, and maybe that's a different gameplay or whatever. As far as income goes, my alliance isn't so bad off. I never really got a lot of taxes from ratting anyway, but I will tell you that ratting's gone through the toilet. Nobody really rats anymore because it's a pain in the ass. And now with these sino changes, it's even worse. Because we started to get into like, oh, we'll rat together and like remote repping dummies, and if we get into much trouble, we'll just drop a fax. Well, that's harder to do now. So, but I'm not having a real big income problem yet, at least from my small side, because I'm still able to get the mining done that I need to get done. But I don't know how it scales up, and maybe Vili or Ron could comment there.
Well, it doesn't scale well. Well, I mean, it scales, you know, so I think it's, you know, probably pretty obvious to anybody in this game that ratting is down heavily, and that is true in our space as much as it is in anybody's. So, certainly the effects are going to continue to be felt, and they're not going to be good, I guess. I don't know how to say, make my point that any clearer than that, I guess.
No, you're right, Billy, because I've had somebody's early today saying, without the way I was able to rap before, why wouldn't I just go to low sec or high sec then and run my abyssals in complete safety? Where is the benefit of making money now in null sec as opposed to other spaces, maybe even wormholes?
Correct.
Is the theoretical world in which NullSec pilots live in NullSec so that they get the fights and the content and the capital and super capital gameplay, but have alts to make money in other areas of space, is that something you guys think is viable or worth pursuing? Or do you have something against that idea?
Well, that's dirty.
Huh. Yeah, for one...
True NullSec.
Yeah, well, for one, I don't like that attitude because a group of my... I can't have people off in other areas of space making money because I need them to maintain my ADMs. I need them to mine my moons, not some safe moon somewhere else. You know, I need them to be ratting my pockets, not doing some site in a wormhole somewhere. You know, my numbers are critical. I need to have all my pilots in my space, maintaining my space. And now if they can't make money, it used to be, well, they're rewarded with economics, right? They get money. But if they can't do that, or if it's getting too hard, then I'm going to really suffer. And I know that, you know, most problems are solved with numbers and organization. And that's why people are getting pushed to larger organizations. But I really feel like even the big guys are going to start to feel that. Like, why am I out here doing this when I can go somewhere else and do it?
Fair enough. All right, that is all the topics we have to hit today, at least on the show. We do have a thing which we've been trying to do. We forgot to do it last week, but we're bringing it back, which is something you might not know, where the guest and the host try and tell the audience something they might not know about Eve or generally Eve-related things. Now, I sort of spun this up on Billy. I forgot to tell him ahead of time, so I apologize for that. We'll give you some time to think about it, and if you don't come up with something, that's fine. But, for example, my something you might not know today is that in the escape menu, there down at the bottom left-hand corner, there are two buttons. There's a thumbs up, and there's a thumbs down. And you're basically telling CCP whether or not you had fun in Eve today by clicking one of those two buttons. I'd recommend you use them, because CCP is being very data-driven and analytic-centric in the way that they're communicating how they balance nowadays, and I suspect that they'll be using that feedback heavily. So that's something you might not know. Ron Silver, let's go with Ron first.
I would say the first thing is that if you are looking at your hangar and you click your ship and drag it outside of the hangar, you will automatically get in it without having to double click. And the second thing is that if you're looking at your inventory and you click the columns button, you can control A and then control C and you'll copy it as aligns and you can paste that in Excel. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Excel, but it's a spreadsheet program that is very helpful.
Oh, wow. That
is just
really
like
cool.
All of the UI in Eve is like that?
Yeah, kind of like your overview, but editable.
Something
Silver, how
like
about
that?
You?
Yeah.
What's something the audience might not know?
How about combat related? How about you're in a big ship, say you're in a cruiser, and you're trying to shoot the frigate Menace, right? And he's orbiting around you with an AB, and you can't hit him, your guns are like, and you're ready to pull your hair out like this is bullshit. Well, if you have a web, and you tag him with a web, you may be grazing him a little bit, but even still, a ship with an AB can still get under your guns. Well, try releasing the web, and then reapplying it again. And you'll see this funny thing happen. When a ship's speed changes, its orbit changes. And for
Ooh.
A brief second, his transversal may drop.
I have something you do not know, which is that when grapplers were introduced, CCP fixed that. It was a bug.
Man,
but because grapplers cycled so quickly and their web amount changed when they cycled, seems to be changed it so that your orbit path no longer changes when your velocity is changed.
Well, you got me then. I got nothing.
That's okay. That was your something you might not know. Billy, you got something for us?
That trick no longer works.
I guess I'll go with something in the same vein as what he was talking about. So if you are in a situation where you are trying to range engage someone and they are keeping a comfortable range, let's say you're trying to fight a crow with a short range interceptor and the crow is orbiting you at 25 kilometers and you can't get close enough to tackle, and you need to be within 10k to get a web and scram and apply, and he's just comfortably orbiting you because he's faster, etc., you can burn into him to force him to move away, and then you burn away from them. So what you does is it forces him to move away, and then his ship will come burn right back in as it tries to chase you. And if you alter your speed back in towards him at the same time, you'll create a situation where, in effect, you should be both burning at each other for a few seconds. If you overload at that moment, you do have a chance to kind of catch somebody who might be trying to range control you.
Good old slingshots. Good trick.
Yeah, slingshots.
All right, well, thank you very much, Billy, for that tip that the audience might not know, and thank you very much for coming on the show today. I know you're a very busy person, being in charge of a whole coalition's, or being a part of the leadership team for a whole coalition, particularly the war effort, and also being a member of the CSM. A reminder to our audience, Billy and all other CSM members are conduits, so to speak, for your feedback to CCP. So if you have thoughts or opinions or feedback in general about the upcoming changes or changes that have already happened in this era of chaos, get them to Billy. Get them to your local CSM member so that they can take that over to CCP and make sure that it is actioned on. Apart from that, thanks to Ron and Silver as well for joining me on the show today. We hope you all enjoyed it. You can join us on Sunday where we'll be showing the video from the CCP Rise interview, which if you haven't checked that out, it is already posted in audio form on talkinginstations.com. And we'll be back with the midweek show next week. We're doing it now on Wednesdays at 23:59 Eve time. So no more time zone shenanigans. Wednesdays, 23:59 Eve time. That's it. We'll see you then. Thanks again, guys.